ஹீல் தெரியும் மருமே. நன்றி லட்சம்.
ཚཚང བྱིས 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 བ Let us cultivate the altruistic motivation, seeking complete enlightenment for the sake of liberating infinite, kind, mother sentient beings. With that kind of bodhicitta motivation, that we should all participate in this teaching. We are all striving to be free from suffering, but to find a lasting peace and happiness. In other words, that we all want to be free from suffering for good, and we want to find lasting peace and happiness. That being our goal, when it comes to finding a method or the process or the path that can lead us to fulfilling that goal, we cannot on our own, without the help of others, we cannot on our own figure out, if you will, the unmistakable method or the path that could lead us to fulfilling our goal. So on our own, we could not figure out the complete way or the means by which we can free ourselves from suffering for good and to find lasting peace and happiness. In other words, that our own knowledge with regard to that method is very limited. And so therefore we need to rely upon a fully enlightened person called Buddha. And Buddha Shakyamuni is such an enlightened person. As an enlightened being or a Buddha, that he sees the situations in which all of us sentient beings find ourselves in, all the things happening to us and in our life, ups and downs, good things and the bad things happening in our life, are perceived or witnessed, if you will, by Shakyamuni Buddha. So he knows about our situations really very precisely.
So
Shakyamuni Buddha is just an example of an enlightened being. There are so many Buddhas, enlightened beings. And they have completely accomplished or fulfilled the highest goal that one could possibly attain. So their own betterment has been completely accomplished. So now they are constantly, if you will, concerned with the betterment of all other sentient beings. Because there isn't even a slightest thing that is left for them to be fulfilled for their own sake. Everything has been accomplished. So now they are completely, if you will, preoccupied with the caring concern for the welfare or the benefit of sentient beings. And so as enlightened beings, these Buddhas see very clearly the suffering that we as sentient beings experience and go through. And in order to benefit us, they manifest in the world, and they can come in ordinary forms so that we will be able to relate to them and we have an access, if you will, to them. So the Buddha's purpose of manifesting in the world in many different forms is nothing but to benefit
sentient beings.
Buddhas and enlightened beings have considered very deeply what could benefit sentient beings the most. You know, what can they really they do to help sentient beings to be free from suffering? And can they provide them some material help or, you know, resources? Would that be, good enough, if you will, to help sentient beings to be free from suffering? So when they thought about these matters, if you will, what Buddhas have found unanimously is that only by way of showing the truth or the Dharma, spirituality, and when sentient beings see the need of spirituality in their life and cultivate the spirituality, put that into practice, then sentient beings are able to free themselves from the state of suffering. Okay? So that's why Buddhas, you know, they come into the world and they give spiritual teachings or what we call Dharma discourses, because they thought that's the best way with which they can help sentient beings to be liberated, to be free from
state of suffering.
And Shakyamuni Buddha has said it very unambiguously. He said, I have shown you the path to nirvana or liberation. Okay? Now your liberation depends on you and nobody else. Yeah. So Buddha is very square about his speech. He said, you know what, I have shown you the unmistakable path that leads to your liberation. So whether you find your liberation or not, it really depends on you. You are your boss, so to speak, protector, and it really doesn't depend on anybody else. So when Buddha said, your liberation does not depend on others, I'm literally translating here. So what he's really saying is, I mean, other people cannot practice for you. You need to purify your negativities and delusions. You need to accumulate your positive and virtues, because other people cannot substitute you and say, you know what, I'll do that for you. Okay, so you are off the hook. They can't do that, you know. So it all depends on you or us as individuals, whether we, you know, can or we, you know, free ourselves from samsara or not. It all depends on us.
Papa again, let's say, man, that round the lama, churan to, mara susu singi susu yani lama ta yeb na yiris.
So in other words, Buddha is basically saying, you know, I have shown you the true path to liberation. So this is like your liberation is in the palm of your hand, you know. So you decide, you know, what you want to do with it.
Okay.
So when we really listen to what Buddha says, and he's very kind of a clear, you know, in communicating to us what he could do and couldn't do for us. So now the responsibility is put on us as individual responsibility. And so we cannot really kind of hang out or, you know, waste our time, because after all, the responsibility lies in us as individuals. And so we all have found this precious human life, wonderful human life, which has great potentiality to accomplish anything. So if we really do care about our own betterment, okay, then we need to use this precious life to fulfill our goals.
So that thing can is in the center, Marazole, Lekanindus, Shiju, there is. Karezana, Rang Hema, Jatoma, Sagi, Dibata, Dibutan Pamabu Sai, Gita, and then Tas Tave Combatoil and Sum Sagores, when the Gera Sagores, or then today the Sai Buddha, then that Ning Razul Dubju, there is.
So if we want to free ourselves from the state of suffering for good, then we have two jobs to do. Number one, you know, since beginningless time until now, we have accumulated so many negativities and delusions, so we need to purify our mind of negativities and delusions. That's the job number one. And the job number two is, if we want to attain liberation, then we really need to generate or accumulate a positive energy or positive actions, virtues, called merit. And that's the job number two. So our two jobs are purification and accumulation of merit.
So the tang around to Karisha Grisena, when around doing you at the Hagogrovas and the Maranzo doing it, Maranzo doing you had to pay, you know what they got to do to be in the Chungi to be Chagaris. You know, Maranzo, big enough, but can you change it? Can you answer that Chimu Chagaris?
So we have all experienced suffering or problem in our life. So it's not like something new to us, right? Suffering is not a stranger to us. We know what it is. Maybe we don't know everything about suffering, but we do. But our suffering, if we compare it to the sufferings of beings in the unfortunate states of rebirth, such as hell beings, then our suffering really doesn't count. It's very insignificant suffering, although for us it seems like a big deal, you know. But if we compare it to the sufferings of unfortunate beings in the lower bad migrations, then our suffering, relatively speaking, is really small or insignificant. You know, whether our suffering or problem is big or small, maybe the more important question to ask is, where does it all come from? Small suffering, big suffering. Okay, what is the real source or the cause of suffering? So it is our responsibility to investigate and examine, where does the suffering come from? Big, small, middle, whatever the case may be. Is it the case that other people are the real source of my problems and suffering? Is it that other people are so generously giving me the gift of suffering? Is that what it is? Or does the suffering come from somewhere
else?
So in other words, what we're talking about is suffering does not arise randomly out of blue, you know. Suffering comes from certain causes and conditions, right? That's what we are talking about.
So that
So we do experience different types of levels of problems and suffering in our life. And so we really need to investigate what brings us all these types of problems or suffering. You know, we do get sick. And, you know, and we really have sense of less of a tolerance about any kind of, you know, suffering. You know, if it is too hot, you know, we feel uneasy. There's the suffering of heat. Or in the winter, you know, we are freezing. You know, we're suffering with cold. Or that, you know, we don't eat food, we are really hungry, suffering of hunger. Or we don't drink anything, we have suffering of thirst. So we have all kinds of sufferings that we face in our life. And we need to ask that question, where does all this suffering really come from? So we also need to ask this question, and sometimes we could all be in the same situation, but some people have a lot of suffering and others do not seem to get affected. They seem to be okay. Why is this happening? We could all be in a difficult situation, let's put it, suffering situation. Some people are really getting it, you know, on their nerve, but other people seem to be okay, you know, not really getting affected. So why is that? You know, when we think about it, all of us in the same boat or the same environment. So we go and eat with, you know, our friends or family members at a restaurant or at home. Then sometimes what will be happening is that some of us get sick and others are fine. We all ate the same food, okay? So why is that some people, some of us get sick and others don't? So that means there must be causes, the reasons or the causes why some people are getting sick, eating the same food, being in the same environment, and other people are just fine.
So that the wrong, just mandawachi, you are saying, till at the end, the middle saneta, yen the man, yen just masana calling young maris. Rang this savanta, rang duty any, David Mingyaris.
So, what all these things are telling us or indicating is that, you know, different things or causes produce different results or outcomes. So, when we create certain causes, then we experience the outcomes or the results of those causes. If we don't create those causes, then we don't have to experience or worry about the outcomes of those causes. Okay? So there is a cause and effect relationship in our experience of different situations and different things. Things don't happen randomly. So as we investigate these matters or the issues, then underneath all these things, what we start to see and we need to understand is how we all create different types of karma or karmic actions. So as a result of the different karmas that we accumulate and create, we experience their results or outcomes accordingly.
So
So when it comes to karmic action and its outcome, you know, it has really to do with what we call individual responsibility. You know, we are the agents of karma. And if we don't create a particular karma, we are not going to experience its result. If other people are creating karmas, they got to go through that, but we don't have to worry about experiencing the results of other people's karma. And neither do they have to worry whether they will experience the result of our karma. It doesn't work that way, you know. Each of us create karma, and each of us are responsible for our karma. But then, of course, there's another kind of karma, which is we call collective karma, which means we all, as almost like a group members, create those karmas together, which means when that karma produces result, so we experience it as a group member. Okay, so there's a collective karma, and there's a personal or individual karma.
And
Shakyamuni Buddha himself said it very clearly. He said, you know, it comes to karma, it has so much subtleties and variations, it's really difficult for people to figure it all out. When it comes to understanding each and every aspect of a karma, all the subtleties and nuances of the karma, it's only Buddha who can do that. And anybody who is less than a Buddha cannot figure out each and every aspect of karma. So if we create karma collectively, if this is a collective karma, we all created karma to die together in a particular situation, then we will all die in the same situation. Just to give you a very specific example, if a group of people, they plot to kill someone, so they all make the decision, they have a strategy how to do that, and they all agree, and they said, okay, we are all in this. And then when they carry out the plan and kill the other person, when that negative karma ripens, it will ripen on all of them together. It is a collective negative karma that they have created.
No,
In ancient India, in one of the Indian kingdoms, I think it's called Kashi, and the king of Kashi, he sent armies to kill a lot of people who belong to Shakya clan. Okay.
That is serious, any serious, and any Kungaoke, any Shakya, that temple, any Zidans, any Jebe Mark, any Shakya to send those.
Yes.
The John Chevronas, Shakya to Chevronas.
Yes. So Ananda, he informed Buddha. He said, Buddha, that king has sent armies to kill Shakya clans, wipe them out. Okay? So can you please try to save the Shakyas, from being, terminated completely?
Yes.
And Shakyamuni Buddha told Ananda, you said, you know what, this is a case where their negative karma has ripened already. There's nothing I can do about it. Okay, they have to experience it. But just to persuade you and convince you, let me show you this. And then by the power of his miracle, he kind of picked up two Shakya children, kids, and he put them next to him. So when that king, you know, killed his soldiers, basically killed all the Shakya tribes in that particular area, later when they said, those two Shakya kids were also dead. And then Buddha told Ananda, now look at this case, see? When you create a karma together, and when it already ripens, this is what happens. You know, nobody escapes from it, you know. Everybody has to die. And this is of course happened long time ago when Buddha was alive or he came to this world, right? But I think we do see something similar happening in our world today. So, I mean, we have experience with car accidents, for example, right? There are many cases where everybody in the car die in an accident. So there's a case where they created the same collective karma and they all die. But there are cases where, you know, some people die, other people are okay. They're a little bit hurt, right? But there are cases, some we call miracle, right? Terrible accidents happen, they're just fine. They just come out of the car and they're walking and talking, you know. Why is all these things happening, you know? Given that it's the same situation, so it's because of different karmas. You have a karma created with other people to die in a car accident, you die. You have not created the karma, you are in the same car, you don't die. You have created the karma, you will be badly wounded or hurt in the accident, you get hurt, but you don't get killed. So all these things are happening and we do witness this, you know, in our time. So when we say, oh, miracle happened, somebody did not die in the car, maybe Buddha saved it. Well, if Buddha saved him or her, Buddha liked to save everybody, you know, so how could it be? Other people got killed. Why didn't Buddha save them? This, that's not what it is, you see. What really saves you is your karma. So that's very clear to us, right? If Buddha loved everybody the same, so how could Buddha save some and not save others, you know? And Buddha again said very clearly about how the karma, you know, functions, major aspects of karma in a sutra. And as Geshe-la was quoting the lines from his memory, he said, if you don't create and accumulate a karma, you will never experience its result. So that means if you don't create a karma, don't have to worry about it. You are not going to be accountable for it. Okay? But if you do create and accumulate karma, you will experience its results. But now when we talk about creating and accumulating karma, you might get the notion, oh, maybe I have to make a lot of effort to create karma. No, you know. Karma doesn't necessarily take a lot of effort to do it. It is clearly said in the Lamrim text, treatises on the graduate path of enlightenment, just by simply moving our lips, if we do it in a wrong way, we can create a karma to go into hell. You see, it's that simple to create a karma.
Mm. 그 생기 다 랑이 시기는 띠바 차요. 띠바 나네 다 랑.
Okay, let me give you this example. Okay, so we are just comfortably sitting, you know, in our seat, and then we just tell somebody, go and kill so and so. Right? How difficult is that to do? And this person goes and kills somebody else. Well, you know, in the first place, both of us have created the negative karma of killing someone. But in from another point of view, we create more negative because we are the one who made other person to do the killing. You know, so now our situation is even worse. See how easy it is to create a karma. But what I'm explaining about the karma, it applies same to both good and bad. Not that we have to talk about the bad all the time. Okay? But we could be just sitting and then we know somebody is, you know, really, how should I say, starving. And then you somehow have no food or whatever the case may be, but you ask someone, could you please kindly give some food to that person? That's all we said. But if the other person gives a food or a drink and that life is saved, well, we also have created the same good karma and we are going to get good result out of it. You see how easy it is to create a good karma as well. So it's the same thing. So when it comes to the subtle aspect of the karma, even the arahats and arahants, you know, they don't get it completely. Okay, we have got the arahants or the arahats. Those are basically completely liberated from samsara, you know, just to simplify the matter. And so there are those who belong to the hero's vehicle, shravakas, those who belong to the solitary realizer's vehicle called pratika buddhayan. They're highly realized. They're free from samsara. But when it comes to the subtleties of karma, sometimes they don't get it. Because of course they know everything about delusions. You see, they're free from delusions. But there's certain mental obscuration which is not necessarily delusion, but still is an obscuration, and certain karma are related to that. And these arahats or the arahants even couldn't understand those karmas. I think everybody has to really pay very close attention to karma. And there's no excuse or exception here. Even the bodhisattvas on many different higher levels of realization, yeah, if they do create a bad karma, they are responsible. There's no excuse because they are highly realized and somewhere on a higher level. No, everybody is accountable for his or her or their karma. So even highly realized bodhisattva who we admire like anything, even if he or she is in a deep meditation doing whatever, but if it happened to create a bad karma, God will pay the price. You know, there's no excuse because he or she is a bodhisattva. You know. Great Kadamba Geshe, I think Chengaba once said, he said, we all have to be very careful and mindful when it comes to karma. Because there are cases where even great meditators, they you know, fall into the hell, you see, because not being careful with the karma. Okay, so there could be great meditators, known as great meditators, but once you create a bad karma, it precipitates, you know, their rebirth in the bad migrations, and they have experienced it.
So the da, pagwa re cha sun, pagwa gongpa to sun da, halam to sun na, le sa du sa gu yo ma re. Nya wa ta dre ngesong le shiya ka le sa du sa gu yo ma re.
Now, once we become a transcendental person, we call Arya, right? And my first footnote, someone who has seen the ultimate truth directly. Okay? That's where we call a transcendental person, an Arya. Once we become an Arya, then we do not create any new karma to be reborn in samsara or in a bad migrations. We do not create any more new karmas to be, you know, in samsara or to be in the bad migrations.
The Messiah karre junse ki gugurvas. Junse karre se na ko lende ngon jo te yore so mi yonki mi yang chong marvas. Te na yi chires lende ngon jo so na to jodi se ni ta ko le zenje shen te sag marvas.
So why is that? There has to be reason, you know. When you become a transcendental being, Arya, you don't create any more new karmas to be in samsara or especially to be in the bad migration. This is because they see, you know, karma very clearly. You know, what are the consequences which are going to come? So they could see, if you do such and such karma, you are going to get such and such a result. So when you see something clearly, you have that sanity, so you do not... Let's say, if you have a nice, clear eyesight, you are not going to jump over the cliff, because you know what is going to happen if you do that, right? So just like that, these transcendental beings or the Aryas, they see, you know, what karmas bring forth, and therefore, they are very vigilant, they are very mindful of their actions. That being said, if they had not purified any negative karmas that they had created before, right, before they become the transcendental being, they still have to pay the price. Okay? If they had already purified themselves of the previous negative karmas, well, then they don't have to worry. But if there are any remaining negative karmas from before they become a transcendental being, even as a transcendental being, they have to pay the price. You know, they experience the outcome of those karmas. Now we may ask this important question, right? Okay, then if we create a negative karma or karmas, must we experience their results? Okay. Now, answer to that question is not necessarily. So you say if we create negative karmas, if we must not have to necessarily experience the result, how does that work? Right? How it works is, before our negative karmas produce their results, if we purify the karmas, right, we could purify through the application of what we call four powerful antidotes or four opponent forces. Nyenpo Topshi, there are four, you know. So we apply the four powerful antidotes, then we could purify the negative karma, although we did that, so we do not have experience their results. So when it comes to confessing or purifying negativities, the rule is same for ordinary people like us or for the transcendental beings, right? If we purify our bad karmas through the application of four powerful antidotes, it should all work the same. We should be able to purify our bad karmas just as they are able to purify their bad karmas. So as you know, we have witnessed in our Sunday teachings, Chenghao was telling us that we have two things to do, two tasks or two jobs: purify the bad karma and accumulate good karma.
So that
Now, as we talk about purifying our negative karmas, right, we also have to consider not only this lifetime, but many lifetimes before. Because some people have this notion, you know, they think about this life, then they kind of feel like, I really didn't do anything bad. I didn't steal, I didn't kill, you know, I didn't do anything bad. You know, so I seem to be fine. No, we have to think about what, you know, we did in our past lives. So when it comes to doing negativities, you know, I mean, all kinds of beings seem to have, potentiality to do it, right? We could be thinking, okay, if I'm born as a big fish, then what kind of negativity do I really create? Well, the big fish is eating a lot of little fish, you know? So that's like a lot of killing going on, right? Every little fish is alive in itself. So if you eat, if you feed on too many little fish, and that's a lot of negative actions of killings. And in the same way, like in the birds, you know, who are feeding on the worms or, you know, other kinds of insects, you know, how vigilant they spend the whole day trying to find more insects or more worms or whatever the case may be to feed themselves on. So this all involves negativities. But now when we enter hell, because of the intensity of the suffering there, it really doesn't allow us to kill or somebody else. You know, there is no time to think that way. The suffering in the hell is so intense that basically it numbs us and we cannot do anything. We cannot go and kill somebody else. So maybe this is where we don't kill somebody, you know. So when we talk about the greatest kind of suffering, most intense suffering, the example we talk about is the hell beings. What they experience. The second word would be, what do the hungry ghosts or the predators experience? And then after that, a lesser kind of animal's problem or the suffering. And then comes our human suffering, you know, suffering of birth, aging, sickness, death, you know, this comes next. The divine beings, the little g gods and goddesses, well, they've got their problems. And their problem has, to do with how, they are very jealous in the first place. They're very jealous with the demigods and asuras. And they're fighting with them all the time. And then as they get closer to the death, well, they see everything that's going to happen to them in the next life. And that really scares them like anything. So they've got their problems to deal with. And of course, the demigods, the asuras, they're constantly fighting with the gods, and most of the time they get defeated. You know, they are the losers, you know. So when you lose, you have so much suffering. So Geshe-la is taking advantage of me being here, so he wants to talk a little bit more about, you know, all these other lives or the beings in samsara. So as we talk about how the gods are fighting with the demigods or the asuras, you know, what kind of gods are there? Well, in the samsara, in the desire realm, I should say, a realm of existence, there are what we call the four directional guardians. These are divine beings. So they are fighting with asuras all the time. And then there is what is called the 33rd heaven, Triyatrimsara in Sanskrit. These gods are fighting all the time. Okay, so these two different heaven gods are fighting with asuras. Because these gods are still, we think like, you know, they are based on the earth. So when we look at the Mount Meru, the king of the mountains, as we say that, where are they situated? The 33rd heaven is right on the peak of the mountain. So they are still touching the mountain. And then the four directional gardens, because when we look at the different layers or the stages of this Mount Meru, they are on the fourth stage and they are in the four directions. So the demigods of the asuras, they are, you know, at the bottom of the Mount Meru, as well as they can come all the way to the fourth stage, you know, where the gods are. So they can come and irritate the gods all the time, you know. So that's why the fight is going on.
So
we are all part of what we call the desire world, the desire realm of existence, and a lot of the gods are in the same world that we are in. So that's why we talk about six types of gods of the desire world.
So
So as I said, in the desire world system where we are in, we have six different types of gods of the divine beings, celestial beings. Of these six types of beings, the four directional guardians and the 33rd heaven gods, they are at the lowest below. So they are, you know, at the Mount Meru. As I said, one is on the peak of the mountain and one's a little bit below, somewhere in the, you know, Mount Meru, at the Mount Meru. So then there are the remaining four divine beings of the gods, the liturgy gods of the desire world system, and they are above, they are not based on the ground, so to speak. So they are not touching the Mount Meru or any solid ground, they are above that level. And these are what are called Thabdal, literally translating the gods who are free of strife or the combat. Okay, so they are not in the war zone. In other words, they are free, they don't fight. And then there are the Tushita gods, Ganden. And then there are the gods of heaven called those who really like emanations. Maybe they like too much miracles and, you know, playing with miracles, something like that. And then there are those heaven gods who are very much like to control the other people's emanations, or, you know, emanating, you know, the beings. So these different types of paradise of the heavens, which are all part of the desire a world system.
That eagle told ne zukam se ya de zukam se ya de zukam ri ki du se ji jo deris.
So now this is the, what we call the desire world system. Then above us there's another world system called the form realm of existence, or the form world. Now this has what we call 17 stages of concentration. 17 different stages of the levels of concentration in this world. Now the beings in the form world, they do not seem to experience any manifest forms of problems, that the kind of things we experience. So they are free of the manifest, seems like they're free of the manifest form of sufferings.
That dunghe yod yores, dunghe ki yores, dunghe khalinghe sum churasul hako yorvas. Dunghe chi dunghe, juvi dunghe, chabanduji dunghe. Dunghe sum churan ta dunghe ki yod yores kunzul. Ni dunghe njo otim edi yores.
So now, I mean, we have been talking a lot about different types of suffering in samsara, and you know that well. You know, we talk about three broad categories of suffering: suffering of misery or suffering of suffering, dungeji dungeji in Tibetan, suffering of change, and pervasive suffering of extensive suffering. Now, of these three types of suffering, the beings in the form world, they do not seem to experience the manifest version of the form of suffering of misery and suffering of change. So this looks like they don't experience these things. However, they have what is called the pervasive suffering. So I'm giving the So I have, I mean, before talking about the reason why that's being the case, but there are some new students, so maybe I just mention it, that anybody who is born into samsara or cyclical existence, we all have, you know, pervasive suffering or what is called extensive suffering. Because of the karmas that we have created to be reborn in the samsara, we all have what is called pervasive suffering. Now here I must caution you that everybody who is born in the samsara does not have to experience what we go through. Okay? So everybody who is born in the samsara does not mean that they are all thrown by their karma and delusions. That's not the case. Because there are many beings who are reborn in samsara, or they come to samsara not so much out of their delusions and karmas, but out of their compassion and by the power of their aspirational prayers.
Yes.
So for example, we believe that His Holiness the Dalai Lama is a perfect example of that, who comes to samsara, you know, out of compassion and out of prayers to benefit sentient beings. So now what do you think about His Holiness? Do you sometimes think that, you know, he has too much worries and too many problems in his life? Do you see His Holiness, you know, going through problems or has suffering? How do you see His Holiness? So what I would say is, if it seems to us or appears to us that His Holiness has certain problems or suffering, you know, just like the rest of us or whatever the case may be, he has too many worries, he has too many whatever the case may be, what I want to say is, that is just the way we are seeing him, but from his side, who he really is, there is no suffering and problem. You know, if he seems to be going through suffering, it's all just the way he wants to appear, you know, to benefit sentient beings. For his own sake, he has no suffering. In the Lamrim, we talk a lot about how somebody is really not blind, but appears or act like one. Okay, so maybe we want to use the word pretend, but that has negative connotations. So I don't want to sound, you know, negative here. Or somebody who does not really have a suffering, or is not really sick, but who just appears like, act like almost, you know, it's like enacting the role that he or she is sick. Yeah. So we do talk about, you know, how bodhisattvas, in order to benefit sentient beings, they manifest themselves in so many different ways, and at times they are very inconceivable to us, you know. They come in the form of food, they come in the form of water, they come in the form of bridge, they come in the form of a boat, you know. So, I mean, they come in many different shapes and forms and to benefit sentient beings.
Садится, садится туда, да. Садится, и туда палец, садится, и туда садится, и туда садится, и туда садится.
So when I said Bodhisattvas could manifest as a food, then if somebody, let's say Bodhisattva is coming in the form of a bread, and we are eating the bread. Now I don't know, how would you think? Do you think that you are eating a Bodhisattva? You're biting into a Bodhisattva? You know, what really happens is, you know, those who have such power to manifest or send emanations, they really don't have to come really into a bread shape, you know. They have the power to produce, you know, bread or a bridge or a boat or whatever is, you know, needed, they can do that. So they are the source of the emanations, but these are all their creations, you know. So today Kishala is in the mood of telling stories, and you know. So maybe many of you have heard about a great Tibetan king by the name of King Songtsen Kambo of the 7th century. That's my footnote. So according to the Tibetan history, he would be considered as the 32nd Tibetan king. Yeah? So we see him as an emanation of Buddha of Compassion or Avalokiteshvara
Chenrezig. Yes. Yes.
So one day, just for no kind of obvious reason, some of people around him, attendants, you know, saw him kind of burst into hysterical laughter.
Yeah.
So then they asked him, you know, what's happening? You know, there's nothing happening they could see, right? But the king was in the hysterical laughter, right? He's just kind of, you know.
Then,
And then he told a story. He said, you know, why I'm laughing here so much, my hat's off here. He said, I sent an emanation of myself in the form of a lay tantric practitioner, right? Vajrayana practitioner. And he was trying to perform some, you know, elaborate ritual. So he's trying to be a little bit showy about it.
Richard
he was just
dancing.
Kind of, you know, dancing.
Yeah.
And so he was laughing at his own emanation, you
know.
But then another day, his attendants found him crying for no good reason. So they said, why are you crying? So that day he said, you know what happened? I sent an emanation, a poor beggar. So he went to ask for food from a nomad. But nomad had this, like, you know, killer dogs, you know, the kind of mastiff kind. And the dogs chased him and beat him, and he was suffering like anything. So now the king, he was just crying because his own emanation ended up in a suffering situation.
So
So the, my point here, you know, telling the story is that we really cannot say that Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, those who have such power, you know, they can do this much or that much, you know. If they see the real need and the time, everything's right, they can manifest in many different ways, you know, to benefit sentient beings. So one of the moral lessons we could learn from this is, you know, we have to be careful how we perceive other people. You know, somebody might look so crazy and, you know, weird, you know, kind of a dodo, but we really don't know who that dodo is, you know.
You know,
Of course, I don't mean like we can completely believe in it. You know, we can do investigation. You want to find out who the dodo is. I don't mean like, you know, don't examine it, but we have to be careful not to be disrespectful to the dodo because we really don't know who the dodo is.
You know?
So how would you or normally people react to someone who's completely drunken, you know, and smelly and lying out on the street, you know? So how would you characterize or react to that person?
Drunk,
isn't
it? Yes.
Yes. So my point is we really have to be very careful not to be too judgmental and disrespectful to this drunk person. You know, we really don't know in reality who this, you know, drunkard person is. But I can say that if there are emanations who look dodos and weird, because the emanations, they cannot be someone who is going to bring or cause trouble to other people or hurt others. That is for sure. You know, however stupid and, you know, dodo they are not going to be a troublemaker and, you know, how should I say, harmful people.
Dodo is the visit.
Kishila wants to know the spelling. Somebody need to spell the dodos to Kishila.
Look like D R O L.
Of course, this sounds so very humorous and funny, the things we're talking about, but the lesson that we really keep in our mind and try to put in practice is very important, that we try to respect everybody else. You know, we do not want to be too much judgmental because the appearance can be very deceptive, you know. And that's why I said the weird and you know, strange can also be a highly emanations of highly realized beings. And that's why great Kadamba Geshe, such as Longri Thangpa, you know, the author of the 8 Verses Mind Training in the footnote again, he said that he respects sentient beings so much that he put everybody else above him. So nobody is below him, metaphorically speaking. What is below him is just the water and the land, earth. Okay? That's below him. Everybody else is above him, and he respects, you know, he honors everybody. I think you should have guessed kick out of some of the expressions I use, like some one of the things, hustle and bustle.
Hustle and bustle.
So basically, we really have to look at situations from many different angles and perspectives so that, you know, we develop appreciation and respect for others. In the Buddhist literatures, you know, there are expressions like, which is, I think, even if I try my best to say it in English, it doesn't come of the same meaning as, you know, because the chul is such a very eloquent expression. There is somebody who appears
look
like or act like, look alike,
yeah.
You know. So that's why sometimes I use the word Buddha performs the deed of, you know, becoming a Buddha. And so somebody who is really not a crazy person, lunatic, but who behaves like one. So he's just going to act like one, you know, enacting like one. Somebody who is not really stupid, but acts like one. Okay? Somebody who is not really destitute, but acts like one. So we have to be careful, because these appearances are very deceptive.
How could it help us to see His Holiness having the flu or something like that? Yeah.
So
the way we look at such situations, when His Holiness seems to be like, you know, he has catch a cold or a flu or something like that, is what we really tell ourselves is, from His side, who He really is, He hasn't created the causes to be sick, you know. But what really appears to us, there must be some reason why He wants to appear like He's a sick, He has got a flu or something, you know. So there must be a reason why He's doing that, showing us that side, maybe teaching us something about our life, that He appears in a certain form to us.
But in this door, this is
And one of the things maybe we want to think about is, you know, this very profound saying that even if one's realization is as high as the sky and as infinite as the sky, once you are in a society, you better behave like any other normal human beings. Okay? So that's the point. You know, somebody could be highly realized from internally, but when he or she is in a society, has to follow the society's rules and regulations and don't behave something strange and extraordinary. You know, just follow the same rules.
So simple monk
And His Holiness always considers himself and calls himself, I'm a simple Buddhist monk. But in really reality, he is not a simple Buddhist monk. You know, he is much more than that. But that's how he just presents himself to the world. And he has a reason why he, you know, says that. So because he wants to present himself like any other human being, you know, sometimes, you know, because human beings do get flu and sick, you know, so he said, okay, I'm like, just like you, I'm getting sick here, you know, so I got the flu. So sometimes we Tibetans have a belief and also a saying, you know, in our sort of traditional faith, that when highly realized holy beings, sometimes they appear to get sick. You know, it is also a case that, let's say there's an epidemic in the locality and a lot of people are getting affected by it, sometimes a holy being might take it. It's not that a holy being can substitute the karma of all the people, but they are, in a sense, practicing the give and take Tonglen practice, that by the power of their practice, you know, that sometimes it does have a positive effect on the situation, and not many people have to suffer it, you
know.
Bodhisattvas and Buddhas, you know, they can sometimes invoke the power of truth. You know, what they say is, you know, if really what they are thinking and what they really say is the truth of the matter or the reality, then by the power of that truth, they make a statement that may such and such things happen. And there are cases where things do happen just the way they wished for, you know, by the power of the truth. Let me tell you another story.
No, dodo.
Now, this is not about dodos, but, you know.
Yes.
In my like a native region in Tibet, of course I haven't seen myself this, you know, holy master, but this is like two generations before me. So they people, the older people were telling us that there was a highly realized you know, lama, but who behaved so ordinarily, you know, down to earth, but his realization was very high.
Said
one time, I think in the certain part of the local area, the farmers were not able to grow their crops properly because of so many, you know, insects or something, you know, infested their crops, so they couldn't, you know, get a good crop. So then I think all the farmers get together and they said, you know, because they heard about his reputation, right? They said, okay, let's invite him and then ask him to please do something to get rid of all the insects. So what did he, when the monk was invited, the lama, right? So he asked them to collect all kind of tsamba. Tsamba is roasted barley flour, the Tibetan seed, you know, and then the butter is mixed with it. You know, usually you make them proper ritual cakes, you know. But he really didn't ask. He said, just bring all the tsamba and just, you know, set a fire to the tsamba and the butter and right there. And then he and his all attendants, almost like they're having a picnic, you know. He was really not serious about, you know, what he was supposed to do. But I think the local people were not so happy, you know, they thought this is a strange one, you know, because he didn't seem to be doing it the proper way in some sense, you know, because this is weird a little bit, you know. So then one day they asked them to bring a lot of like a broken horns of the yaks, you know. So they just collect them and bring it to me, you
know.
So then somehow he wrote something, he inscribed some letters into each of these, inside these broken horns, and then he told them, like, bring this on and go to every top of the mountain, the hill around your locality, and just put it on top of, you know, all the hills. So the story has it, for some reason, all the insects infesting their fields were all gone, disappeared, you know. But the local people were really surprised, you know, because they knew that he didn't do any pujas or prayers, you know, he didn't recite anything, he was just having a picnic or something, you know, he was not serious about what he's supposed to do. So then they thought, what did he really do? All the insects were gone. So they were curious and they started to kind of a look inside the broken horns, you know. So what was inscribed inside the broken yak horns was, he said, I am a Vajrapani, so I am asking you, the, you know, all these beings, you better leave, you know, don't stay around here. That's what he wrote inside, you know. And that's all that was there, you know. So all those insects were actually basically listened to his, you know, him, and they left. Yeah. So Tibet has many endless stories like that. Because I'm not telling, this is, this is as far as what the, you know, older generations were telling us, that was honestly speaking, not like a fable stories, you know, kind of nice and interesting things to tell. But they, I mean, we all believe these are really true stories that happened. So I think we got to stop for pretty soon. So now, just coming back to what Buddha has always been telling us is two things. Don't harm others, help others.
So,
So as I often remind all of ourselves, that we must not harm any sentient being. You know, we are not talking about just human beings, but any sentient being, we must not harm them physically, verbally, and mentally. And then Buddha said, if you can help others, help them as much as you can. But we have to really understand what Buddha meant by, you know, help others or benefit others as much as we can. You know, because sometimes we might get the wrong notion, like, oh, somebody's asking for this and that, you know. So we think, okay, then I will give it everything. Looks like we are benefiting the person. You know, we have to be careful. It doesn't mean that give everything somebody's asking for. So helping others, you know, should not include like helping others to do something negative, right? If somebody wants to kill someone, well, say, okay, can you give me some weapon? Okay, here it is. No. Or if somebody wants to commit suicide, okay, here is the one. Okay, do it yourself now. No, that's not helping, the kind of help we're talking about. Basically, we cannot help others to do any negative karmas, you see. That's not the help we can give. So if there is a true benefit, the real positive outcome for seven others, then we should do those good karmas, right? If something we do, it brings positive outcome for ourselves or for others, we can do those.
Lamren, now, what is it?
Where are we in the Lamren?
We start now.
Tell me where are we exactly, you know.
We are on page 92, the Brown Book, and it's a story about the painting, the Tonka.
Definitely.
If you have the materials to paint the Tonka, it's a story about if you have the right teaching.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you still remember now. Yeah. So the example that's talked about first is that when look at a Tanka painter, this is a Tibetan artist, you know, who draws things on a canvas, you know, called Tanka. When first we look at the beginning, it looks like there's nothing being drawn. You know, everything is very sketchy, you know, some kind of outline. You know, nothing's really clear. But they must have all the necessary tools and materials to do the Tanka, right? You need all kinds of color of the paints, you need the brush, all kinds of stuff, and everything. Okay? And then slowly, through the gradual process, they draw different parts of aspects of a deity, if you like, right? They color it, you know. So everything is done gradually and put together. So when we look at, you know, painting a tanga or producing a tanga, it involves a collection of necessary causes and conditions. All the necessary causes and conditions must be assembled together to be able to do a tanga, right? So just as, you know, Thangka painter has so many materials, but everything is to help him or her to do the Thangka, right? And the focus is just to draw the Thangka, whatever, you know, he or she is going to draw. And they use all these materials to do that, facilities. In the same way, we should understand that all the three types of practices of initial level practitioner, intermediate level practitioner, and advanced level practitioner, all these differences are, as a matter of fact, meant for an individual practitioner to put into practice gradually. You start from the small, go to the intermediate, and go to the advanced. So everything is meant for an individual practitioner to put everything together to be able to achieve his or her focus or the goal. So we have to stop there this evening. So maybe I told you a number of stories and I might have entertained you quite a bit this evening. Hustle and bustle.
Hustle and bustle. I learned too. That's very nice, Dodo. What do you think? Hustle bustle better or Dodo better? Really? Hustle bustle. Hustle bustle.
Sangha sing song.
Okay.
Let's dedicate our collective marriage for the flourishing of Dharma, the source of benefits and happiness throughout the universe. May His Holiness the Dalai Lama and all other holy beings live long and be successful in fulfilling their visions, benefiting sentient beings. May spiritual communities throughout the world and spiritual practitioners from all traditions remain healthy, harmonious, and be successful in fulfilling their spiritual aspirations. May this and other world systems be free of all kinds of unwanted pains and problems, and beings find peace, happiness, prosperity, and spirituality. In short, we dedicate our collective marriage for all kind mother sentient beings to be free from the fears and dangers of two types of mental obscuration, and may we all become Buddhas soon.
Sensor and watch it, my dear Bonashi, your tea. Je Can you see my two hands is same or what? This is a little bit swollen. Oh yeah, this one, yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh,